Pregnancy can be a magical time for a woman, but it's also a time when stress can be very high, and that can affect not only the mom's health, but the health of the baby as well. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Glad to have you along today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Fatima Wakil has done some very interesting research on that connection between stress and health, and she's a postdoc fellow at the Center for Women's Health and Health Disparities Research. It's part of the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Fatima, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you so much for having me here today.
I'm really glad to have you with us, and I'm very interested in your research. You talk about the concept of personal health, or personal capital,
yes,
in your research. It's kind of interesting, I think. In general terms, what is that?
Oh, so personal capital is something that I've basically conceptualized as the internal and social resources that a woman can draw upon during mm-hmm. pregnancy that can help reduce her exposure to stress or help her cope with stress during pregnancy, and then thereby help her have a reduced risk of having adverse obstetric outcomes, such as low birth weight or preterm birth or pregnancy complications.
How did you come to be interested in this research?
So I've always been interested in maternal and child health all through my my master's and my doctoral level, but then I really became interested in health disparities, specifically the disparities between African Americans and white women, and also other racial and ethnic groups. So when I was looking at some of the reasons that they say cause health disparities, they usually focus so much on risk factors such as mm-hmm. stress, you know, differential wow. stressors and socioeconomic status. And so I wanted to really focus on some of the positive things that can help, you know, reduce these disparities. And that's why I decided to focus on these protective factors or personal capital factors that women can draw upon during pregnancy and before pregnancy in order to have positive health outcomes.
So a very positive approach. That's wonderful. How did you design your study? Tell us about what you did.
Okay, so basically this is based on data from the Los Angeles Mommy and Baby Study, which is a population-based study that they did in Los Angeles County. Mm-hmm. So I was my doctoral advisor was the principal investigator of the study, Dr. Michael Liu, who is now the director of the Maternal and Child Health Bureau in Washington, D.C.
Oh.
Right. So he was actually the PI on the study. And so we basically collected data on women about their information before pregnancy, during pregnancy, and after pregnancy. And so what I did was I basically analyzed some of this data in order to do the study.
Really interesting. Talking today with Fatima Wakil, a postdoc fellow at the Center for Women's Health and Health Disparities Research, about her work on stress complications with pregnancy. Great to have her along. Have you been pregnant? What impact did you think stress might have had on your pregnancy? Do you have some tips to share, or maybe some experiences to share of your own about minimizing stress during pregnancy? We'd love to hear from you. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And for the father side of it, or the husband side of it, what did you do to help reduce the stress? We'd love to hear that, some examples there as well. Again, 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call. Specifically during pregnancy, what types of personal capital are most important?
Okay, so I've looked at personal capital on three levels. I've looked at the individual level, where a woman can have sort of personal strengths or internal resources, including things like self-esteem or their mastery, which is their feeling of control over their life.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the social level, I've looked at partner support, which is a very important factor, and then their social network support, which is, you know, support from their family and their close friends. And then on a community level, I also look at neighborhood support. So basically, how close is their neighborhood and how much do neighbors really help each other and do things for each other? Because that really plays a role in, you know, women having that support during pregnancy.
It does. That's, well, I don't know if it's surprising. I think about my own neighborhood and our
right.
neighborhood. We would have a very supportive group of people, we're in town,
right.
In other neighborhoods that might be sort of like bedroom community types, that might not be as easy to find.
Right. I think it's basically the idea of not being isolated and just having, someone to talk to on a regular basis. But it might be your partner or your mom or, even your next door neighbor. But it's just the idea of having someone to have emotional support, on a regular basis to kind of, whenever you feel stressors, to kind of let go of some of that. And also other types of support if necessary, like getting, information about resources in your community. And the neighborhoods are great for that. Finding out where, the best, schools are for your kids and where the best nutritional, sources are in your neighborhood. So all sorts of information can also be gained on a neighborhood level.
Mm-hmm.
That's important.
Thinking about our family, my wife and I know there were certain times that she obviously went through. I think every woman who is pregnant, there's some stress going on. And I'm pretty sure of that. And I expect that you define, there were different levels of stress that you
yes.
sort of set up or defined, or could you talk about that?
Sure, sure. So I've actually spent, my colleagues and I here at UW-Madison, we spent a lot of time looking at the measurement of stress. And my mentor, Dr. Whitney Witt at the Department of Population Health Sciences, she's my mentor. And so we've been looked at, and she and some of our other coworkers, co-authors have looked at the measurement of stress. And so if theory really suggests that stress exists in three domains.
Okay.
The first domain is the environmental domain. So basically it suggests that when an environmental stimuli, such as a stressful life event, like maybe someone dying or being homeless mm-hmm. or something like that, overwhelms an individual's coping resources, then there's a perception of stress, which is psychological stress. And then when you have psychological stress, then that would result in physiological responses to this stress. And that might, be things like increased heart, blood pressure, your cortisol levels. So we're really looking at stress at the environmental level, the psychological level, and the biological level.
And what impact does it really have on a woman's body?
So during pregnancy, pregnancy itself is a very stressful time. Your body's going through a lot by itself. And then when you have added stressors, you might be more vulnerable to having pregnancy complications. Things such as preeclampsia, which is having high blood pressure during pregnancy, or gestational diabetes, infections such as, bacterial vaginosis. So all of those are complications that may result during pregnancy. And also, of course, during delivery, you might have preterm labor or premature labor. And then if that is not controlled, there would be preterm labor. And then maybe even a low birth weight baby or a baby who's small for gestational age, which means mm-hmm. that for their gestational age, they're below 10% of their birth weight.
Okay.
So.
And I expect fetus has been affected.
Right. So because of things like preterm birth and low birth weight, yes, the fetus is those infants who are born low birth weight or preterm birth, those account for actually 40% of all neonatal deaths in the U.S., which is a death occurring within 28 days of life.
Mm.
So if you look beyond the children, when you look at the children who actually survive that, then we're talking about, a whole host of other issues, like things like cardiovascular disorders, neurological impairment, respiratory distress, disorders, and then, of course, more longer term things in childhood and then in adulthood, resulting from that.
We may be stressing out all Wisconsin Public Radio listeners who are women and pregnant right now. You understand. Don't stress out. Listen to this. Fatima has got some very positive things to say here. Amy in Sauk Prairie, let's turn to you. Hi, thanks for calling.
Yeah, hi, thank you. Wonderful discussion. I'm calling from the Pediatric Congenital Heart Association, representing mothers of children with congenital heart defects. And many times, 40,000 babies a year are born with heart defects, and it's the most common birth defect, and oftentimes, or half the time, the mother is made aware of this defect at the 20-week ultrasound. And in my experience, it places such a level of stress on the parent during the last several weeks of pregnancy, knowing that their child is going to be born with a congenital defect that may require immediate intervention or surgery. Can you talk about the role of knowledge of a potential birth defect, and I appreciated you recognizing the support and the community support, because there is that support available for parents of children with defects. Mm-hmm. But can you kind of talk about the stress and during the second half of pregnancy that may be imposed by parents with the knowledge that their child has some sort of defect?
Mm-hmm. Sure, that's a great question. So basically, I think that there should be sort of a mutual responsibility between the healthcare provider, the physician, and also the patient, the mother, just to kind of work together to kind of build the resources during this time period, this stressful time period. And I think the one important source of support might be the woman's partner, their husband. And just kind of drawing together, knowing what might happen after the birth, but drawing together and just trying to stay strong. And also, I think that physicians in the clinical setting really need to help, when they're talking to high-stress women, they really need to try to offer, sources of personal capital, such as, community referrals, maybe support groups for other parents going through the same thing. And I think all of that would be really helpful in sort of, mitigating the effects of the stress and making the delivery as smooth as possible despite the outcome.
Hmm. And thanks, Amy, for calling, by the way. So if you don't have enough personal capital, let me put it this way. How does having enough personal capital or not enough affect the stress a woman may be dealing with?
So the way that I've looked at this is basically looking at the balance between stress and personal capital, and that really affecting their adverse outcomes. So if a woman has more stress compared to their personal capital, then they are more likely to have an adverse outcome. So basically I say that we've posited that women stress and personal capital sort of accumulate over the life course, and they modify each other to impact outcomes. So a woman who has a lot of stress, if she doesn't have enough personal capital to deal with that stress, then she might be vulnerable. But if a woman does not have a lot of stress, she does not necessarily need as much personal capital, because she wouldn't be as vulnerable to having a negative outcome.
And then, as you're saying, things can happen during the pregnancy as a result of that stress then.
Right. So basically, things like a pregnancy complication, there might be. So our study found that women who had greater stress compared to personal capital were actually 1.4 times more likely to have a pregnancy complication. And they were also more likely to have preterm birth and lower gestational age, which is how long the baby is in the womb. So they were actually a one unit increase of the ratio that we created of stress versus personal capital was associated with 2 days of decreased gestational length. So basically, the child was in the womb for 2 days less for each unit increase. So that makes a difference.
Yes. Chris and Madison, thank you for calling. We'll turn to you next. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi. I had a very stressful experience with one of my childbirths. The first pregnancy went great, but the delivery was as bad as it could be. And after that, I didn't even realize this until I got pregnant again, but I had major post-traumatic stress syndrome. My heart was constantly racing with the second pregnancy. My stress levels were through the roof, and I knew this, and I didn't want to take drugs because it could affect the pregnancy and the baby. So I did art therapy. I did all the talk therapy you can imagine. I tried everything, and nothing worked. My stress was just extraordinary throughout the pregnancy. I didn't have any health complications with that pregnancy. The delivery went perfect. There was no low birth weight, no early delivery, nothing. So that part was fine. And that sort of cleared it because I had a successful delivery. So that part was fine. But I wonder, what are the long-term effects on my child's health based on growing up in a womb where my stress hormones were so high? And coincidentally, my child, that child that was born has very, very severe autism and is very profoundly affected. And that may or may not be at all related. I mean, that could be totally coincidence. But I'm just curious if any studies have been done showing what the long-term impact on that child's health is if the womb environment is so stressful.
Mm.
So basically, I think most studies focus on the stress affecting the child indirectly through an adverse outcome, such as preterm birth or a low birth weight or small for gestational age, where there isn't necessarily a direct link from just because it's hard to sort of measure stress during pregnancy, from stress to, having an outcome later on. So you might have had an outcome that maybe you didn't even know about, and then that would increase the child's risk of having some of these other negative outcomes, like cognitive impairment or neurological impairment, you know, having attention deficit, for example, when they're in childhood. And then the studies have also shown that children who are low birth weight, actually, when they get older, and when they become adults, they actually had higher risk for cardiovascular disease and diabetes. So it's very interesting because they have this sort of rapid catch up where they try to weight gain. So then they end up actually being more likely to be obese and have cardiovascular disease and all of that. It's very interesting. So basically it's an indirect effect of stress on the child, you know, usually through an adverse outcome.
Hmm. Chris, does this help out?
Sort of. Because my child wasn't low birth weight and I didn't have gestational diabetes or any of that, has it been studied, like, you know, when they're 20 years old, are you seeing, because of that, the stress hormones during pregnancy, are you seeing, you know, the ADHD or like you said, the diabetes or any of that based on just the stress hormones?
Probably that research hasn't been done yet.
I don't think it's been done yet because there isn't a lot of longitudinal research where they follow women, you know, from their pregnancy straight through the children, you know, growing up. Most of the research is done on stuff that has happened in the past, you know, retrospective data. So that is definitely something that we need to look for in the future. And that's a great question and a great a research area that we need to really explore.
Yeah,
I think.
Absolutely.
One other thing I'd like to point out, if I could, is after that first birth where everything went wrong, my child ended up being okay in the end. And everyone said, oh, that's all that matters. The child is healthy. That's all that matters. And it discounted the trauma that I went through. And none of my family or friends or husband could ever understand that. And that really had a long-term negative impact on me because everyone's response was, oh, the baby's healthy, that's all that matters.
Yeah.
So just addressing that need to nurture the mother, even if the baby's healthy, after the trauma is incredibly important.
Absolutely. And I just wanted to talk a little bit. So maybe physically the baby might have been healthy, but you definitely went through a lot of mental stress, it sounds like, after having your child. And that would have definitely affected your relationship with the child and even your thoughts about yourself. So that would have definitely affected your child in a way that you may not even have realized. And I think that's very important, that we need to focus a lot more on the mom. We need to look at the M in MCH, which is, you know, maternal and child health, not just the C, which is the child.
Mm-hmm. Chris, thank you. I'm sorry, go ahead. Did you have something else?
No, that's it.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. It raises the issue of what people can do, you know, family members or husbands or other family members or friends who care about the woman to support her during pregnancy.
Yep. So interestingly, I'm actually doing another group of research right now where I'm talking to women about their pregnancies and their personal capital. And what I keep hearing is that it helps if when a partner or a family member just kind of gives them time alone during pregnancy to sort of just relax and take if they have children already, to take those children, for some time and just spend time with them so that the woman can have time to herself. And of course, financially, it's definitely very important. A partner's help is very important there, or even like a parent's help, so that they're not feeling so overwhelmed with the bills, because that's a very, very important financial factor or stressor. Just little things, really. So just and also having someone to talk to on a regular basis, to pick up the phone and, you know, just even if it's a friend or a coworker, just pick up the phone and vent, you know, have the pregnant woman be able to vent about whatever's going on, you know, because that really helps sort of let out that stress and, you know, move on. But if you don't have those things on a regular basis, it gets tough.
Talking today with Fatima Wakil, who's a postdoctoral fellow at the Center for Women's Health and Health Disparities Research at UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health, visiting with her about her research relating to stress complications with pregnancy and how we can kind of overcome some of those issues. And it was certainly great to have her along. If you have questions or comments, you can join in, or maybe experiences to share as well. The number is 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or you can post a question on my Facebook page. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. You can post a question there. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Cyrus-Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I hope you'll stay tuned, because at 11:45 today, Dr. Michael Guerin is here. He has some advice on how to talk with your doctor and how to most effectively ask the questions that you need to have answered. But right now we're talking with Fatima Wakil about her research on the impacts of stress during pregnancy. Again, you can join in with your own questions or experiences at 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org. Or go to my Facebook page and post there at the Larry Mueller Show. Let's go to Simon in Middleton next. Simon, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hey, thank you so much. This is a great topic, and I just had a quick comment and then a question. You know, my comment is really, I think what I'm hearing your guests say really speaks to the power and importance of really anything that could reduce stress or just make a mother feel more comfortable, or a woman when she's pregnant. And, you know, to me, that would include really anything, even things that aren't covered under the traditional purview of medicine, things like acupuncture and massage and kind of other complementary medicine techniques. And my question is, you know, I know some people who are involved in, you know, as birth doulas, and I was wondering if your guest has done or knows of anyone who's done research that looks at the effect of having a doula, you know, prior to or during pregnancy, and what effect that can have on maternal stress levels or even health outcomes. So, thank you.
All right. Thanks, Simon. And a doula is?
So I believe a doula is basically someone who helps during the pregnancy and during the delivery, just to work
there
with the woman, and yeah, to be there and to help deliver the baby.
Any research that you're aware of relating to the positive effects of a doula?
Well, that's not necessarily my area of research, but I have read a little bit about doula support, and I believe there is a little bit of research out there, it's coming up, it's increasing, you know, which is great, about doula support, and that it does have a positive impact on the woman and her pregnancy. Just having that sort of regular support during the visits and also during the delivery, having that sort of continuity of care with a doula really helps a woman out, sort of relieve her stress and have a more smoother delivery.
And thanks again, Simon, for calling. Nicole in Milwaukee, we turn to you next. Hi, Nicole.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Sure.
I just wanted to share my experience prior to becoming pregnant with my son. I had a miscarriage. And once I did become pregnant with my son, it was terrifying. I was just completely scared that it was going to happen again. And I was incredibly stressed out the entire time. And I did end up going into labor 2.5 weeks early, and I always just kind of attributed that to my level of stress. My son was stuck in the transverse lie position, which means he was on his back face up and stuck, and I wasn't dilating or progressing at all, so I did have to have a cesarean, and it was pretty scary and traumatic, and just kind of always wondered if me being scared the whole time had anything to do with, you know, going into labor early and having him in the position that he was in.
Yes, I think definitely a woman's stress affects her in so many ways that we can't even imagine. And, you know, her mental health also, your anxiety. And some women also get depressed during pregnancy. So that definitely does affect your outcomes. I'm not so sure about his position. That might have just been more of a, something that just happened. But I think the premature labor, there's been a lot of studies showing that, stress before pregnancy and also during pregnancy is related to preterm birth and premature labor.
Hmm. Yeah. And I'm sorry, go ahead, Nicole.
Oh, no, I was just listening. Go ahead.
Well, I was just wondering about during delivery itself. Is that there? I would assume the impact would there would be some impact even during delivery of stress.
Yes, I mean during delivery, of course. But at that point, it's when we look at from a public health view, it's a little bit too late, you know, to think about interventions during delivery. So we actually focus a lot of our efforts, you know, before the woman even becomes pregnant, and also in early pregnancy to sort of mitigate her stress and have a healthier outcome.
And but still, I mean, even after the baby, mom and the baby go home.
Yes.
This can continue, I would think.
Of course. So there's, of course, it can be kind of extreme, like a postpartum depression situation, or just, you know, even the blues. And all of that really impacts, you know, the relationship the mom ends up having with the baby and also the child's, you know, short and long-term health. Yeah. So all of that does continue. And I think it's really the role of the healthcare provider to have a continuity of care. Of course, there's a six-week visit that they, in the postpartum visit, that the woman comes back into the doctor and talks with, you know, about what's going on at home. And I think that's a great opportunity to sort of give this interconception care, which is basically care that you give between, between conceptions of children. So, and I think that physicians just generally need to work harder, I think, too, and not just physicians, but, you know, healthcare providers and public health personnel as well, to work harder to provide this interconception care of women who've already had a child and who may be planning another pregnancy, or they just might be, you know, of reproductive age, you know, so they're able to have another pregnancy, and sort of just make sure that they kind of, you know, recover from some things that they've had in the last, you know, the stressors that they've faced in a past pregnancy in order to prepare for a new one successfully.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I think I was just so eager to become pregnant again that, I didn't really consider much of that going into my second pregnancy. And then when I was, and it was only a few months, but then once I was pregnant again, I was still terrified. You know, I didn't.
I can understand.
Yeah.
Definitely.
But everything has turned out fine for you?
Everything's great. Yeah.
That's great. Congratulations.
Thank you. It was stressful, but things are great. And I did hypnotism, talking about the trauma from giving birth and also the trauma from having C-sections, which is, tremendous. I didn't really consider it until it actually happened, but it's a lot of trauma, and hypnotism really helped me get through it, and then afterward deal with the pain.
Yeah, the physical pain, yeah. Especially.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much.
Thanks, Nicole, for calling. Appreciate your call very much. A listener called in and wondered if we could explain again and talk a little bit more about personal capital again. Could you explain us simply what that, your concept of personal capital is?
Sure. So personal capital is something that I believe each woman can have. Of course, it's something that she can draw upon during pregnancy. But I also believe it's something that can be developed, you know, even earlier in her life course. So things like self-esteem or even optimism or having, you know, a feeling of control over your life, mastery, all of those things I really usually determine even at an early age.
And they're internal kinds of
things. Internal or personal strengths, if you may. So those are things that women bring, you know, from their own sort of their personality or their personal their strengths.
So that's part of their personal capital then.
Yes. So that's their personal capital on the individual level. And that's something that I think that we can only sort of change, you know, earlier in childhood, is to help children be more, you know, have higher self-esteem. Families can help, you know, their children, you know, in many ways at home and at school, you know, kind of increase their internal resources.
And then on the other side was the social.
The social aspect. So those are things like partner support. So partner support is obviously, for one thing, you know, finding a partner that you think will be supportive even before you think of having a family. And that's very important. And once you are in a relationship, you know, having better communication skills maybe with your partner, just to kind of voice what you need. Because sometimes your partner doesn't always know. They might be a great person, but they may not know necessarily what you need. So kind of maybe voicing your needs more, and then they can help you out more. And then, of course, your relationship with your family and your close friends, and just kind of making those connections, you know, even before you become pregnant, having some strong ties, if you can, into your family and to your close friends. And also, of course, your neighborhood, having all of those resources in place as much as you possibly can, you know, even before you conceive a child, is kind of having all those resources ready so that when, if you do happen to come across a stressor during pregnancy or even before pregnancy, you kind of have those resources to fall back on and really help you out. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times this isn't really in the woman's control. You know, once they have a partner, they have a partner, you know, their family is who their family is. And once they become pregnant, they can't necessarily change their self-esteem. So a lot of this, I think, falls also on, you know, the clinical settings, healthcare providers, you know, trying to screen high-stress women and helping them find, you know, community resources and trying to offer the most appropriate resources for these women who are, you know, experiencing great levels of stress.
And are there things that a woman can do? I mean, how does a woman really make the effort to minimize stress during pregnancy? I suppose seeking out these, there are certain things that she can't control probably because she's kind of born with or has learned certain ways of internalizing things.
Right.
But I guess then you want to look for the outside resources.
Right. So more of maybe the social resources. I mean, I guess in the internal level too, they can maybe make a conscious effort to try to have higher self-esteem or to be more positive or optimistic about their outcome. But, you know, more realistically, I think the social resources really play an important role. And just sort of, like I said, you know, trying to choose as much as you can your support system. And I know that isn't always possible, you know, for, you know, especially with different situations. But, you know, trying to find a partner who you know is going to be supportive before you even start a family with them, with him. Trying to have a good relationship with your family and your close friends. And also building those networks in your neighborhood, in your community. And when I say community, it can also mean, you know, members of your church or your religious institution, even your coworkers. All of those supports are really important and make a difference. So mm-hmm. whatever you can do at your end to kind of reach out to other people so that they, you know, will end up being there for you when you need them the most. And like I said, it isn't always in our control. These things, you know, sometimes we don't have these options and we don't have these supports. So it really, I think, falls a little bit also on the healthcare providers and the public health programs to try to help increase these. And, you know, maybe have support groups available for women during pregnancy, group prenatal care, you know, maybe like free couples counseling. All of those kind of things might help women kind of get through this.
And I'm remembering back now to going through the parenting classes with my wife, and I'm not sure, you know, from the husband side of things, the father side of things, I'm not so sure that we focus very much on our role as supporters. It was more of a discussion of what to do during the pregnancy and how to help at the time of the birth.
Right.
But it would have been nice to have had more information, because I was really stupid, I think, when it came to all this. And
right.
I could have done a much better job.
Well, you bring up a great point, and there's actually a growing area of research right now in maternal and child health where we're actually looking at the role of fatherhood, and there's a lot of growing research on that. So it's kind of like, where is the F in MCH, if you know, they say. So it's sort of like, what is the fuck? Because we always focus so much on the woman, and while that's important, it kind of places a lot of the burden on her, which isn't fair, where, you know, we forget there's the other half of the equation, the partner. So there is actually a lot of work being done about what, you know, what it is that fathers feel when their wives are pregnant and what they go through, because that's also very important to take into account. And also, you know, a lot of them probably just feel powerless or helpless, not knowing what to do and not having anyone to talk to about it.
Yeah. So, and I was thinking about it not so much for example, I'm just thinking about me, not so much for my own benefit, but for how I could do a better job for my wife.
Right. So I think with this growing area of research, hopefully there should be some interventions, you know, that they develop to kind of help fathers, you know, become more involved with their wives, you know, during pregnancy and before pregnancy as well, of course, and of course during the delivery. So this is definitely a growing area of research, which is encouraging.
And we had a Facebook comment from Liv who said, I have 2-year-old triplets. Identical boys and one girl, obviously. Any specific research regarding stressors that women carrying multiples face?
I'm not familiar with the research, but I would just imagine having the physical exertion of having triplets during pregnancy, and of course the delivery, and also usually when you have multiples, you have preterm delivery, and that's part of the deal. So all of that is definitely very stressful. I don't know about any particular research on the topic, but I would imagine it's definitely very stressful.
Leaves toddlers were born at 34 weeks.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But she said they're very healthy. That's great. Serena in Wausau. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, I just had a couple positive statements to make about stress during pregnancy, and I actually had a really good outcome with my six-month-old son. He's healthy and striving. I had a very stressful pregnancy. Me and my fiancé had a lot of fighting and problems, and I was living in New York, which on its own is very stressful. And I had a miscarriage 2 months prior to this pregnancy that I was in. And I guess my advice is really search out a great doctor. I went to NYU for high-risk pregnancy, and I already knew that I really wanted a male doctor. And he's one of the main reasons that he carried me through, you know, my whole pregnancy. And just being high-risk, I think he really knew what women were going through. He's seen the worst of the worst and always made me feel that, you're fine. And that really helped me, just having that doctor with me and going to the doctor so many times because of the high risk.
Yeah, good point. So, thank you very much for calling, Serena. Fatima, a comment?
No, I was just saying that's a great positive experience. And I'm glad that, you know, you had a healthcare provider that was just very supportive and nurturing, it sounds like, during your pregnancy.
Yeah.
And it's great, especially when you have, you know, stressors at home, like you mentioned, with your partner and all of that, and living in a stressful neighborhood. Like, you know, that New York would have. I think it's great that you had your physician to count on, and that's a great support.
Thank you very much. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate it very much. Are there resources to help people with this, or how would you, I mean, would a person, are there printed materials online, or, I mean, you've been talking about resources that are, you know, there's a whole lot of people
right.
out there and a lot of, you know, I'm not so sure that there may be printed resources, but are there?
Well, I know of one program that I've called Centering Pregnancy, and it's basically a prenatal care program that has a lot of group aspects to it. We have support groups, and you know, women come together and they, you know, they talk, and I think it even carries them through breastfeeding, lactation. So I think that a program like that would, I think, be very, very helpful in a situation, you know, to help women in many different levels, you know, their social level, someone to talk to, and also help them, you know, and I think it also offers individual prenatal care. And so to basically, you know, help these women have maybe higher self-esteem and, you know, just help them work through some issues during pregnancy. So something like that. I'm sure there's printed materials out there anywhere, but this is a specific program that I'm aware of has been very successful.
Well, I want to thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. The time flew by, and I hope it did for you, too.
Yeah, definitely. I really enjoyed being here. Thank you so much.
Hope we can do this again. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Larry.
Fatima Wakil, a postdoc fellow at the Center for Women's Health and Health Disparities Research. It's part of the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. I hope you'll stay tuned, because today, right now, we'll be finding out from a doctor what the best ways are to ask questions of our healthcare provider. It seems like a good topic to go along with what we've just been talking about. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.